Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is July 10th, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. Now, this is going to be an SGEM extra. Season number 3 is ended after 42 great episodes. Why stop at 42? Because it's the answer to life. But don't panic. The SGEM will be back in the fall with a structured critical review every week, trying to cut that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year. During the summer months, SGEMers can download season number 2 as an ebook, perfect for reading on the beach. It's over 200 pages of the 42 episodes with all the hyperlinks out to additional resources. Thanks to Teresa Chan and Rob Clayton, they did a fantastic job of repurposing the material into another format. So I'll be posting SGEM extras each week over the summer with foamy good content. And the first one is a presentation from the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians, or CAPE, that was held in Edmonton earlier this year. The theme of the conference was Lighting the Way, and I had the privilege of chairing the Free Open Access to Medical Education, or FOMED, track with 4 amazing speakers. I recorded each of the 4 talks from the CAPE FOM track. Now, the audio quality is not the greatest, but the content is super. I will be posting on the SGEM blog the slide set from each speaker and have a YouTube link if you want to watch the presentation. The first in this series of 4 speakers is Aaliyah DeRamsey. Aaliyah is an R2 emergency medicine resident at the University of Toronto. Her academic interests are diverse but include education, online education technologies, and simulation. While she does spend most of her time at the hospital being an R2, she does like to spend her free time exploring the food, fun, and fitness opportunities that the big city of Toronto has to offer. The title of her talk is What Emergency Medicine Educators Can Learn from Bill Nye the Science Guy and the Khan Academy. She describes her talk as, social media is quickly gathering momentum in the realm of emergency medicine, with a new generation of ED docs so adept at using social media, Twitter, podcasts, blogs, how can we equip ED docs and trainees to effectively teach online? Recently, a pilot digital scholarship project was initiated in which a resident can apply curriculum development theory to practice by creating their own online digital curriculum. Using this as a model, she discusses how ED docs and trainees can become more proficient at knowledge translation online. So here you go. This is the audio from Aaliyah's talk, and again, it's not the greatest audio quality, but the content, like I said, is super. If you want, you can download her slides, or you can watch the YouTube video.
So I have a CPR student here. It's okay, we have not tall enough to see over this. So, like Ken said, thank you. My name is Aaliyah, and I'm R1 in emergency medicine at the University of Toronto. And my interest has been, as a first year, on looking at how we can learn to teach effectively online. And that's what I hope I can bring to you guys today. So I wanted to declare that I have no conflict of interest, other than I use the word iPhone, which is not the generic, so we're gonna try to say smartphone, because we have to use generics at this conference. And objectives, there's gonna be some basic terminology just to help you understand where FOMED and digital scholarship is going, and hopefully give you some very specific ideas about how you can make effective online resources. So we all recognize this guy. He was a staple in my house as a child, and if you ask my mother who the most effective educator I ever had was, she would immediately say Bill Nye the Science Guy, because he could get my sisters and I to sit quietly and watch television for 28 minutes without bickering. And hopefully everyone recognizes this guy. This is Khan from the Khan Academy. He has been revered the world over because he has taken frustrating, anxiety-provoking homework time for teens around science and math And make learning fun, where you can pull out an iPad with your family or your mom and actually learn together. Both of these educators are really standout educators in their respective fields. But what I wanted to know is, what did they do that made them so effective that you remember them and recognize them instantaneously? Emergency medicine education looked a lot like this. You're tweeting, you're looking up apps, you're scrolling through pocket cards, and you're engaging with people around the world about things that you're learning. This is no surprise to anyone in this room. My interest really is in looking at asynchronous education. And that means learning around cases and not according to a schedule or a syllabus. And that really is what we do in eMERGE. Our patients come in whatever order they want, and we see them in the order that they come. And for a lot of learners, this is the challenge of emergency medicine. There's no curriculum. You have to be able to pick up and go on your feet. And I think asynchronous education, which is learning at whatever order comes your way, can really be an effective way of learning. And technology has been one of the solutions to people who find this challenging, like I think we all do. So my question when I started residency as a consumer of FOMED and as a consumer of digital technologies was, how could I actually become an effective online educator? And I really thought about this for some time, and I approached some mentors and some leaders in the field, like Teresa Chan and Andrew Petrosonia. Hopefully that name resonates with a few people. I wanted to know what they thought about this, and how could I do this? And as very good mentors, they didn't answer my question. They turned it into a research project for me. And so that's what I did. I took a month and I learned about digital scholarship and learning online. Digital scholarship is a word I've used a few times, so let me help define it. It's the way we use technology to learn and teach. And it's the way that we can define what we do on social media. It's not just about tweeting for fun, and it's not just about writing blog posts for fun. It is fun, but it's also an effective teaching mechanism. So there's a few things we know about digital scholarship that we've established already in the few years that FOMED has become really popular in emergency medicine. We know that it's a staple, that all of us are doing it. Every single one of us, I'm sure, has at least one app or one digital technology that they use in the emergency department to teach or to learn. We know that digital scholarship and engaging in online teaching actually does make you a better resident because it has advantages over textbook-based learning. You can engage in real-time discussion and critical analysis. You can actually start learning how to teach and find an area that you can become a master of and develop content mastery in an area that you may not have had any skills in before. And we also know that there are very few resources out there to actually guide effective online material production. So there isn't a lot of guidance about how long should you make a blog post? What's the best format to use if you're going to do a podcast? Or how you get people to click onto your site and actually look at your materials? I couldn't find anything, and I'm not sure if anyone has found anything that they would like to share, but it was one of the areas I think was really showing a need for development. So I developed a digital scholarship elective. And this was a month where I spent thinking about how we're teaching online currently and what I could do to become better at it. I used diabetic foot infections and skin and soft tissue infections as my topic of area that I wanted, my area that I wanted to master, or at least develop some skills in, because it was an area of much need of personal growth. And at the end of this block, I wanted to really understand what digital scholarship meant in the context of asynchronous education. How is technology helping me as a resident learn on the fly? And as a final objective for this block, I wanted to develop my own learning materials for diabetic foot infections and skin and soft tissue infections that I could share using FOMED and using online dissemination tools. So I'll briefly show you these resources. They're not designed for you to be able to read off of the screen, but they're all available at Board EM to be downloaded into your pocket cards or onto your iPhone. So we created something called Aaliyah's Antibiotic Series, which is a really, really big name to live up to. Thank you to Teresa Chan for creating it. So we essentially made pocket cards for reference. So there was a diabetic foot infection pocket card on the treatment and management of diabetic foot infections. There were two skin and soft tissue infection pocket cards, one for cellulitis with abscess and another for cellulitis without abscess. And there was a chalk top. And the chalk top was designed as a really big primer on antibiotics for medical students and junior residents. Now, the reason I'm telling you about this project is because I think that it provided me with a framework of actually critically looking at online education. And I came up with a few design strategies that I wanted to share with everyone today that hopefully is a start for actually looking at how we can make more effective online educational materials. It wasn't something that was easy for me, and it wasn't something that came naturally, actually. And the first thing that I really thought I learned from this project was that in order to design effective online learning materials, you have to be very specific about your audience. I think we all tend to see learners like this. They're all the same, they all have the same needs and the same skill levels, they'll all engage in exactly the same way. But we know from our clinical experiences that this isn't true. Learners look a lot more like this. There's juniors and seniors, there's people who are more comfortable with some topics than others, and there's people who learn faster and in different ways than others. That's not a surprise to anyone in this room. So the idea of being specific and actually targeting a certain group of learners when you're creating online learning materials will actually really make it your materials more effective and more intentional for the people who are using them. So I call my first design strategy today, understanding your audience. There's an area of development called design thinking, and it's used in business, it's used in technology, it's used in computers. It's all about the way that we actually see how people use what we create. It's not just in medicine. And they really emphasize the idea of asking yourself specific questions about who is going to use your resources, how much time will they spend using your resources, when and where will they use it, and how will they access it. And the key part of these questions is to actually narrow down your audience. It's not going to be everything to everyone, so find a certain group of people that you think will really benefit from the resource that you're creating. So what we did is we took our idea of creating a diabetic foot pocket card for learners, a very broad area, and we asked very specific questions. So in terms of who I wanted to use these cards, I thought it was really going to be for junior learners, like R1, CC4, CC3. I thought they'd spend maybe 10 minutes looking at the resource. And I learned later that that's a grand overestimation. In terms of when they will use it and where, I thought that it would be good to have something you can pull up on your phone in the emergency department as a quick guide to get ready for the fearful pimping. And I thought it'd probably be used in a minor area of the emerge, so in your rapid area or minor. And so you needed to be something that was to the point. You weren't going to have a lot of time to read through extensive writing. And I really wanted to design something that was specific for a small screen that you could use on the few inches you have on your iPhone. Importantly, we realized that the more specific we made the answers to all those questions, the more intentional we could actually be about creating these resources. And it started to look really different than what we originally intended. This resource, while it might be very useful for junior learners, probably would not be useful for anyone in an infectious disease fellowship. But you know, they know way more than I do about this topic. But this is good as a primer and as a starting point with a very emerge focus. As I mentioned before, design thinking is creating products with the end user in mind. And as an example of people who did this really well, I refer back to Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and the Khan Academy. They really knew who their audience was. Be it trying to target small children and keep them occupied for 28 minutes by using big noise and big excitement, by really engaging with colors and lots of fancy moving parts of a show, or really targeted, short, visual, simple presentations of math problems that help learners at home learn without monopolizing the only few hours you have for learning and doing your homework at home. Both of these gentlemen, in their own ways, actually mastered targeting their audience, and I think it was one of the things that really separated them from other educators. And they did it exceptionally well. So my first design strategy was to be specific about your audience. So we did that. We created very targeted resources. And then we launched them online. We were able to host them on boardgame.org and had a few months to see how they were picked up. They were pretty successful, actually, in the beginning. So the skin and soft tissue infection pocket cards were viewed 814 times at the time that I made this presentation in 55 countries. The diabetic foot infection pocket cards were viewed in 35 countries. They had a life in the fast lane mentioned, which was a huge, huge bonus. And we realized that although I had created resources that I wanted to be viewed in about 10 minutes, the average time people spent on these pages was between 3 and 5 minutes. I grossly overestimated the amount of time that people would spend on the website and had to really question whether or not these resources would be effective or useful to people if they're not really reading the whole thing. So we spent some time thinking about, well, people are not going to spend a lot of time accessing these resources online. How do we know what they're going to look at? Or how can we make it so that they at least know what they're looking at before having to scan the whole page? So the second idea that we were reading up about was about F-scanning. And I'll tell you what F-scanning is. It was created by the NN Group Online, which actually specializes in online marketing and design thinking. Before I even tell you about that, though, I came across a very interesting article recently in Time Magazine. Microsoft did a study where they looked at 2,000 people, and it was actually a Canadian article that they that was published, and they showed that the average attention span today is 8 seconds, which is now less than the average attention span of a goldfish at a staggering 9 seconds. So if you can imagine, those of us trying to teach or learn anything, anywhere, be it online or in person, you have about 8 seconds, so I've lost you about 14 and a half minutes ago. But that's okay, I'm gonna try to get you back again. The idea is that you have a very short amount of time, about the time it takes to read or send a text message. So how can we take advantage of that time and encourage you to stay a little bit longer? So like I mentioned, F-scanning, and I think it's the second design strategy because it really helps you develop a framework for what you're creating. The NN Group Online took eye-tracking devices and put them onto people and had them scan through websites and web pages, and they used heat maps to actually track how they did it. Now, I don't know if anyone else in this room does this, but I certainly don't exhaustively read web pages. I look at a web page, I find a picture, I usually find a caption of the picture, I maybe scan to something that's bolded, and then down to the bottom to see how long the page is and whether or not I'm actually going to read it. And then I usually get a text message and move on. Don't read the whole page at all. And what they showed is that I'm not unique in that. Everyone actually does this. People will scan the page in the shape of an F. If you squint your eyes on the middle picture, especially, you'll see an F. People scan across the top of the page where there's some bolded text or the title. They'll scan down the side of the page until they see some more bolded text. They might get across that text. They'll see the image or a list on the right-hand side. They'll scan that. And then they'll barely read anything at the bottom. That's your 8 seconds. And that's where you need to front load your information that you're going to show people in 8 seconds. Because if you scan through a page like in an F format, and if I put all my most important information in that F, you at least will get something out of this, or an idea of what I'm trying to present in the other 500 words I've painstakingly put on to the website. So when we created these diabetic foot and skin and soft tissue pocket cards, we tried to use this as we developed it. So again, you don't need to be able to read the words on the page, but I want you to see how we presented the information. We used an F. When you scan across the top, you can see a few things. There's gradations to the information we're providing. There's something different between the first, second, third, and fourth columns. We put headings at the top so that you knew that what the columns represented. So there's an uninfected, mild, moderate, and severe category. And then we put the subheadings down the side. So even if you just scan the top of the page and the side, you know what the rest of the information is on this page. And hopefully that makes it easier for you to actually track through it. Or when you save it onto your phone, you can see that, hey, the next time I need the information about diabetic foot infections, I know this pocket card is going to tell me something about signs and symptoms. Or it might tell me something about treatment. You've created a log of this resource, and hopefully when you need to refer back to it at some point, you'll have an idea about where it's going to take you. So we really tried to take advantage of this idea of scanning. And I think it's something that if you remember and use as you're producing online materials, it'll actually make them easier to kind of for people to store into their minds. The last design strategy that I learned about and we learned about and wanted to use in our resources was to create a framework for visual cues. So I'm showing you two pictures here. The one on the left is the information that I originally was going to post online. It's the exact same information that you'll find in the table. That was, I thought, a really great resource because it was going to be concise, I used really nice bullets, it was black and white and very simple. But you can't see anything about that. You can't get any idea about what I'm trying to present. And if people F-scan, then they're going to see one category across the top and likely nothing the rest of the way down. There's nothing to indicate any sort of learning framework. And anyone who's taught junior learners, especially, will know that it's important to help create a framework. It's not just about memorizing facts, it's about putting facts and information into a framework in your mind so you can pull it back out when you need it. the staff and the senior residents that I work with all seem to do this exceptionally well, and it's something that, as a junior, we need to learn how to do. But if you can help create a framework for your learner, then you can actually, I believe, help make their learning easier. So the resource on the right is what I've already showed you. It actually provided you a framework. There's colors so that as you're tracking through your phone and tracking downwards, you don't lose which column you're in. There's a gradation to the color and severity. So red, bad, you get scared about red things. Blue, keep cool, it's fine, it's unaffected. We use bold when it was appropriate at the top, but not too much. And the other thing we did is we actually helped create some comparisons. So the image on my right, to your left, there's no ability to actually see how mild is different than moderate, and moderate is different to severe. And I think that's really important for people to know as well. You're categorizing things. How can you prove that it belongs in one category and so it doesn't belong in another? And so we tried to help people make that comparison. So even if you looked up mild infection treatment, you'd be able to compare it to moderate and hopefully learn a little bit about moderate infections too at the same time. This is by no means a perfect way of doing it, but it was one way that we saw that we could actually help create a framework. And I think that's the third design strategy that I learned and thought would be really effective for people to know when they're creating online tools. There's a few areas for future growth in terms of digital scholarship, and my colleagues will present about this shortly. The first one, I think, is that we need some guidelines. We need some more information, way more than what I presented here today and what I know, in terms of how to create effective online content. I think we're really focusing a lot on volume these days. It's about how many blog posts, how many page views, how many podcasts. And volume is important because it's how you create a mass and a critical mass of people using technology. But it's not necessarily the most important way of presenting and teaching online. I think you actually have to think about how can we make this effective so that it's not just a huge database of information that's not necessarily targeted or categorized. The second area is an area that I found that I had a lot of support in was the fact that my staff and mentors were guiding me through the process. And it was incredibly effective. With technology these days, these staff don't necessarily need to be at your side. They don't even need to be at your program or in your city. The mentors that I had were in two completely remote sites from me at the time, and they were still able to help guide the process. This is really no different than having somebody vet your grand rounds presentation, or to talk to you about a topic that you're going to talk about at rounds. Having their guidance actually allows you to talk to someone about it, and it's very helpful. And finally, I think that we need to look at more ways of assessing validity. Again, it's not just about volume and page views, which is one way of looking at if something was successful. Actually looking at if what you're doing is making an impact, I think, is some critical analysis that needs to be done whenever anyone posts anything online. So just to go back to review the objectives that I started the presentation off with, I wanted you to understand what asynchronous education was. That is learning on the fly, learning as things come your way, not according to a syllabus. As well, the definition of digital scholarship, which is the way we use technology to learn online. And then I mentioned three design strategies. To be specific, to remember that people F-track or F-scan the page, and to create a framework for visual cues when you produce online content. I'd like to acknowledge the support of the mentors that I did have on this project, Dr. Andrew Petrosoniak at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, Dr. Teresa Chan from McMaster University, as well as Dr. Ken Milne for allowing me to be a part of this talk and this project, and then roryem.org because they allowed me to post my resources online. And I'm open to questions at this point if there are any. Thank you.
So there you go. That's the first in the series of Foam Track talks from the CAPE meeting. I will post the other three talks through the summer. Now, during the summer, I do have a request for the SJammers out there. It takes about 8 hours a week to put this show together. And that includes selecting the article, doing a structured critical review, arranging and recording with some fabulous guest skeptics, editing the audio, and writing a blog entry. Now, I love doing it, and I look forward to doing every episode. However, as part of this social contract, I would ask you to help me spread the SJM foaminess around the world. So if you could like the SJM on Facebook and follow the SJM on Twitter, that would be great. It only takes a few seconds and a couple of mouse clicks. Now also, if you have time, maybe take a couple of minutes and go over to iTunes and give the SGEM a rating. What rating should it be? I know. How about my favorite number? 5. I would really appreciate any additional feedback you have. The SGEM has improved each year because of the engagement of the SGEM audience. Previous successes have been the Keener Contest, the SGEM Hot Off the Press, and of course, the SGEM Classics. That's all for today, but remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.